You are listening to The Alex Way.
Hola, everybody. ¿Cómo están? This is your host, Alex Moraes. Welcome to The Alex Way podcast. This is a podcast in which we interview soccer professionals, coaches, players, fanatics, and we discuss passion, dedication, leadership within the soccer world. It is my honor to always interview people that are so impactful in positive ways. And I think today's special guest is not an exception to the rule. So anyways, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, please go ahead and look for this podcast in your favorite platform, whether that is Google Play, Spotify, or iTunes. Subscribe, leave me a review, and how about this? Comment in the section below so we can have more questions, guest ideas, activity ideas, topics, whatever you'd like. Also, you can find us in social media with the hashtag TheAlexWay, and you can find me in Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, kind of all over the place. Anyways, well, I'm going to go ahead and jump into this. Today, I have the honor to interview Martin Claes. If you don't know who Martin Claes is, allow me to introduce you to him. Martin Claes is originally from Scotland. That is right, the UK, where soccer was born. Martin has been a soccer coach in the college realms and also youth realms. He actually is very knowledgeable when it comes to the game. When reading his bio, something very curious about him is that he came from Scotland to the U.S. on a soccer scholarship to Truman State University. Go Truman! Now, in Truman, he played with the Bulldogs soccer squad, and that was the most successful of the runs. Now, he has the experience as a player when it comes to college in NCAA Division II and the All-American team as being the All-American midfielder. And he also ranks number two as in the all-time in career assists and number seven in career goals for the Truman State Bulldogs. Now, during his coaching career, Martin has made a number of stops at unbelievable institutions throughout the U.S. Some of these institutions would be Westminster College, SUNY Maritime, Bacony College, and also the University of North Texas, Truman State, as well as Tulsa University when he was a volunteer. I think only that institution. Today, he is the soccer coach of East Central College. He comes from St. Louis Community College after having won it all. And he's making history with the first women's soccer squad of East Central here in Franklin County, Missouri. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the few people who have the A license in Missouri, I give you Martin Claes.
Thanks, Alex. That was a quite fantastic introduction. Hopefully I can live up to some of those expectations, but you know, I'm excited to be on your show. You know, we love soccer, and there's more to it than that. But yeah, we love to talk soccer. We love to meet like-minded people. So great to be here.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you to your wife as well for allowing me to interview you, because I know family is important. You can be spending time with her as well as with your daughter. And congratulations. I know that you're waiting and expecting another Claes in the
tribe. Thank you, Alex.
That's awesome. So, first things first, if this is the first time that someone is listening to you, watching you, what would you tell them about you that makes you unique?
I just think it's as someone who loves the game of soccer, if there's anything unique about me is that, you know, I've sampled, you know, growing up in Scotland and coached a little bit when I was younger over there. And then coming over here, I sampled all of American soccer. I mean, you know, you talked about my accomplishments at the college level and some of the things I've done. you know, but I've also coached, you know, the toddler classes at St. Louis Vera, and I, you know, I've sampled, wow, you know, all of soccer, as far as in the coaching realm. And I think that's given me a unique perspective where, you know, I feel like I can connect with any player, any other coach, and just grow this love that we have, this passion that we have for the game.
That's amazing. See, that is interesting. I love to talk and dive into the story of people because I continue to learn more about them. And in this case, besides being co-workers at East Central, because yes, folks, he is the boss man at East Central, and I'm the goalkeeper coach slash assistant coach, along with the others, Matt Fennessy, Marty Brown, and Nathan Doza. So he is the boss. But I do, it's interesting that you're saying that you went ahead and coached the little Kickeroos in Vera. I mean, these are kids that probably are under the age of 5. Was that beneficial still today, even in the college realm with adolescents and adults?
Yeah, I mean, there's no immediate transfer of you know, how the game is played, but I think it always allows you to put yourself, you know, I think the biggest thing we can do as coaches is to put ourselves in the player's shoes. So if you put yourself in the mind of a 3 and 4 year old, and then, you know, where does their love come from? And that connects to the same reason we play when we get older, right? It's fun, it's active, you know, so I think it helps you keep sight of the important parts of the game. You know, we all get serious sometimes, and we all, you know, want to express ourselves or our team and things, and that's all normal. But again, going back to the root of that joy of play and passion, I think that's one that keeps us young and it keeps the game fun.
That's awesome. Absolutely. I mean, obviously it's not the same game standards by any means, but probably gives you those values such as patience, tolerance, and other sort of situations that will allow you to have a better relationship in leading the team, leading the player, and why not. Now, we said you are from Scotland. So tell me about your hometown, man, because I would love to go to Scotland, but I have no idea really, besides the fact that your national team just crossed it internationally and qualified for the Nations Cup, European Nations Cup, right?
So, you know, it seems like a long time ago now, but when I was younger, Scotland, this was kind of before or right around the time the English Premier League started. Scotland had good teams. I remember the 1990, 94 World Cups, qualifying 90, we were there. You know, France 98, you know, we had Brazil on the ropes, 1-0, and they, Cafu scored a late minute. You know, yeah. So when I grew up, Scotland, you know, was, you know, definitely is a footballing nation. So, I mean,
absolutely,
football dominates. You know, I have nephews that play back home, and football dominates their lives. You know, they got posters on their walls and jerseys, and they always want me to buy them something, you know, football related. And so, you know, if you put yourself in a cold, wet, you know, town that just loves soccer, you know, it's Perth, a beautiful little city in the right on the Highland line, a beautiful scenery, you know, amazing green grass, flowing hills. So it's a beautiful place. And then it's just has this passion for football, you know, right through Scotland.
What's the name of your hometown?
Perth, Scotland.
Okay.
Perth. And the main team is St. Johnston, big club. They play in the Europa League every now and again. Most people haven't heard of them, but the Mighty Saints are a big club. So, and then obviously you have Celtic and Rangers in Scotland. And, you know, if anybody's a football fan and they know, they talk about rivalries, I think the only one that could be bigger would be Boca River Plate. That's the only one that rivals.
Wow, that's food for thought right there. That is apparently the derbies of derbies. No questions asked. And how about the club Hearts? Still around?
Yeah, they got relegated last year. Exactly. And actually COVID related, because they actually were in last place, but they weren't mathematically relegated. But yeah, so that's a sticking point. But yeah.
That is so sucky. What is it?
I used to live by their stadium, actually. So.
No way. And yeah. I guess you grew up going to the stadium and seeing them play as well. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So I grew up next to St. Johnson Stadium, just in you know, within 5 minute walk, and then I studied it in Edinburgh University, and I lived down the road from Tynecastle, which is Hearts Stadium. So.
Wow. Now, do you still have your immediate, well, your immediate family is there with you. Obviously, you're a married man, you have your kid and you're expecting, but your parents, are they still living? Are they in Scotland? Do you have a lot of family there in Scotland?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, my mother and my sister. So they're there. My sister has a young boy. He's a budding football player. And then my mom's actually a twin. So we're really close with my cousin and her two sons. So that's my immediate family. My mom's one of seven. So I have aunts and uncles. But everyone,
wow,
for the most part, is in Scotland, or some of my aunts are in England. But yeah, everyone's there.
Because you come from a big family, do you see yourselves? Are yourself having a lot of kids?
Oh no, I'm getting too old to have a lot. I got number two on the way, and you know, I'm getting to 40 quickly, so I don't know about any more.
Guys, I was gonna tell you guys, if you Google a picture of this gentleman, he's not that old, okay? He's not even close. I mean, he's getting close to 40, but come on, he doesn't even look 37, correct? Right now.
37 years.
There it is. Yep. Okay. So that is interesting. Now, giving us more perspective, we're both internationals who left their home countries and arrived in the U.S. Why did you leave Europe? I mean, when I think of Europe, I don't think as the same context as African countries, Central American, South American countries, in which, you know, the economics probably... I'm not saying that they have the best GDP or economic growth, but we try to leave because of a better tomorrow and to hopefully get something better. How about in your case? What triggered it?
Yeah, you know, I think the only thing that draws Europeans maybe to America that I could think of is, you know, we grow up with American movies, we see the big cities, and you know, it's funny. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. You know, when I arrived in America, I flew into Chicago, and it's like the big city lights, the towers, the skyscrapers, amazing. But then I get on the train and I head to Kirksville, Missouri. And at some point along the line, I'm thinking, you know, there's Amish carts going faster than the train. And now if you've been in Europe, you know, the train systems are pretty impressive. You know, I'm looking at Amish carts going faster than the train, and I think, am I in a time warp? You know, did I go back in time? What happened? So we're drawn to the big lights, I guess, maybe, you know. But it was also a path that had been blazed before. You know, I had a neighbor growing up who's now the coach at Northern Illinois University. You know, he'd played at Truman, and he kind of blazed that trail. And then I actually brought another player, Jonathan Brown, who you know, is living in Kansas City just now coaching. I mean, you know, he kind of jumped on that trail as well. So, you know, it was blazed for us. And it was just an opportunity, you know, an opportunity to keep playing, an opportunity to use soccer as a vehicle to try something new in life, you know.
That is exciting. I mean, it is exciting, especially admirable, I would say, when you decide to, because it's one thing to, okay, let's go to college and why not? But it's a totally different story when you leave the known for the unknown and you go to another country that in your case, it's not even in the same continent as it was for me, but it was overseas, leaving your mom, your sister behind. I mean, did you experience any sort of culture shock despite the fact that you speak the English language, Martin?
Yeah, there was definitely a culture change, you know, socially was a little different. You know, I will say, I mean, I guess it sounds pretty obvious, but, you know, Americans are drawn to the Scottish and the British and the Irish, you know, that this idea, you know, when I got to Kirksville, they have the Highland Games and they have families that know more about their Scottish heritage than I know about my Scottish heritage.
So, oh, wow.
So I think that makes obviously the connection easier. And then, you know, I give a lot of credit to students who come and don't, you know, I had a team, you know, so you know, it took a couple of weeks, but once I'm on a team, you know, the guys, you know how guys are in the locker room. We're joking around. We're making friends.
Fun.
You know, I do have a lot of respect because I was friends with other international students in college that weren't athletes. So they didn't have an immediate kind of group of friends, you know. So I think it's, you know, in some ways soccer, again, just makes those inroads so much easier. You know, I mean, the first Thanksgiving with a family in St. Louis that looked after me the whole time I was here, you know, we're still close.
Wow.
You know, those things, again, through soccer made the experience amazing, you know?
Amazing what soccer, the power of football, right, around the world. Such a prominent sport around the globe that it opens doors. And especially for those of us who have experienced what it's like to not only coach, but also being in the cleats or the feet, the shoes of those players in the locker room, that truly serves its purpose. And I'm glad that you made a way to become a part of that community, because it, as you said, it's very difficult. So I'm really glad the transition went fine. And a shout out to that family that it seems to me sounds like some sort of like a host, not really, right, because you came to college, but kind of like that host or spiritual caring family for you, you know?
No, I mean, it was a teammate and, you know, his family. I mean, I still go to their Thanksgivings. We talk. I'm friends with the whole family. I'm friends with their kid. My kids are all grown up now. I'm going to college. And,
wow.
You know, it is. It's something that, you know,
crazy.
You know, there is a perception of Americans being kind of brash and cold. But, you know, from
sure.
being here, it's actually the opposite. They're actually very warm and welcoming and giving people, you know. So
absolutely. Especially in the heart of America. The Midwest, and
yep.
I mean, you came to the Midwest, so this is where through reading I realized this is where you see those strong conservative American values, which is all
yep.
about embracing each other and why not, and you see some country folks, but they're very open, as you said. It's not,
yeah, of course,
you know, it's not what you expect at first. Now let me ask you this. So you went to the university in Scotland. So does this mean you came here to study a master's right after?
No, I actually attended university in Scotland for 1 year.
Okay.
So it was a case of getting, you know, I about halfway through the year of my studies, I knew I was coming out here.
Nice.
So I mean, I continued similar studies. I was in sports science, so I continued similar studies. But
absolutely.
But I mean, the goal was to get back playing, the opportunity to play every day, because, you know, if you're not a top level pro in Europe, you're not playing every day. And this was a backdoor opportunity maybe to get into the game, you know.
And tell me about your playing experience in Scotland. What was it like when compared to U.S. soccer? What kind of divisions were you blessed enough to experience back home?
Yeah, you know, I was offered some trials and did some weeks at some professional academies. But at the time I wasn't seen as good enough to kind of break into those academies. So I saw them, I was there, I touched them, you know, but it was more your local club. My local club was, you know, the team that kind of got me going. And then there's a different pyramid over there, you know, people talk about here. You know, you have semi-pro, we call it juniors in Scotland, it's called non-league in England. So actually I was a little bit of a late developer, but around 15 or 16, well, the men's teams started kind of looking at me like, hey, if the academies aren't looking at this kid, let's. So then I started playing men's football with people who I wasn't getting paid, but they were getting paid,
sure.
You know.
Wow.
And ex-pros, guys in their late 30s that are ex-pros. And I mean, from a learning experience, when you talk about, you know, when I was 15, 16, 17 playing against men, I grew up so much. And ever since I've been in America, I've kind of saw that as the missing link, which I think some of the MLS teams are starting to do now. But man, 15 playing against a 35-year-old who doesn't want you to make him look bad because you've got young legs and you're fresh and you can run and you got skills, you learn a lot, because that 35-year-old is not going to let you have fun. You know,
exactly.
Some of those lessons, and I again stayed in that age pure model all the way through up 18. You just don't have those experiences. You're always with
no.
kids your own age. So that was the biggest one for me. And actually, you know, before I came over here, I started getting a little bit more looks from you know, second and third division Scottish teams, and you know,
I was like,
I could try that, or sure, I could try America, and
right.
And I felt like the sunshine and something new was just as important. You know?
That's great. No, I mean, that makes total sense. The same situation happened with me, that I don't see much occurring now here in the U.S. per se. It is, but it's just at lower scales. But playing up is nothing to really have a major concern about. So that exposes you to different experiences, to folks who were professional, semi-professional, who are retired and why not. And it brings a different, like, to the game. The same situation. They don't want to be ridiculed by a young player, so they're going to go harsh on you and even injure you if you're not careful enough. I mean, no kidding. But very interesting. Tell me what was your college soccer experience like? At all. I know you made the friendship connections quickly, but in terms of the game, did you say the coaching here is probably not as knowledgeable as back home? Is it more physical, or did you have a blessing to have a great coach?
No, I actually had two great coaches in college. You know, it's an interesting one, because I think there's a certain nuance to the game that I think international players have, and I think American players are developing it, but it's, you know, the coaching when I got here, I was Alf Bobal, who was my head coach. We, you know, he already had built a good team, and we jumped into it, and, you know, it was, I did notice the American game was very physical, from an athletic standpoint.
Sure.
But not physical from a nasty standpoint. So coming from Scotland, where it was physical, not because they were big and fast and strong, but because they were nasty.
Oh.
So then coming against big, fast, strong, you know, it was an adjustment. But I felt like it was one that, you know, I was ready for. The sheer athleticism of some of the players that I ran up against was kind of shocking. I mean, at times.
Wow.
I mean, just guys that were, you know, multi-sport athletes, you know, play guys – played basketball and soccer, you know, 6'2", can dunk and stuff. And you know, physically, we didn't see those players in Scotland. I mean, you know, that they were, you know, in a different category. But you know, it was a much higher standard than people probably understand. You know, when I went back and you know, after the first year, I go home and, oh, the Americans don't know anything about soccer. And I never forget my Truman team went over to England and we played a non-league English side.
Okay. What happened?
With the first team they set us up with, the company set us up and, hey, we've got a game for you. It'll be a really good game. It's like a U18 team. And I'm like, I'm from Scotland. We're going to murder this U18 team. I mean, it's 5-0 after 25 minutes. I'm like, dude, like these are men. Like we're 21, 22 years old. We're men, you know? So then he's scrambling on the call like, hey, can you bring your men's team? Because you were supposed to play another under-18s team. And then he's on the phone like, hey, can you bring your men's team? Because, you know, so we actually played a men's team and it was Sutton United who pop up in the FA Cup now and again. And,
yeah,
you know, I think it was 1-1 or 1-0. It was a really good battle.
Not bad.
You know?
That's awesome.
And they didn't like young American kids that could play. You know, they weren't really happy about it. But, you know, again, his perception was, these are Division II American kids.
Sure.
And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. You know,
right.
The divisions isn't really a dividing of quality here.
No.
You know, I mean, it's there's Division II teams that are better than Division I teams and things like that. So,
see, that's the misconception that is managed, unfortunately. And I don't know who started this marketing campaign per se, but, yeah, I'm glad that a college coach like you can – actually tell our listeners and viewers that's not the case. Never undermine, right? Junior college, for instance.
No. I mean, it's, you know, it's the levels are based on funding and divisions that the school are in. And, you know, because there's a lot of kids out there with this mentality, D1 or bust. And listen, you know, I played four or five D1 teams in my college career, and I never lost. I never lost a Division I team, you know.
Wow.
And don't get me wrong, we saw some good players and some good ones, but, you know, that we were just, we were equally as good, you know.
That is impressive. That's a great thing to know, and what a record. That's pretty admirable, pretty cool. We'll see who's the next person to break such record. Records are meant to be broken, right? So we'll see.
Well, there's good. I mean, like I say, there's good junior college. There's good Division III. There's good Division II. Yeah. There's good Division I. And listen, there is an elite Division I, which that exists, and those guys, you know, are elite. But everyone else is you know, pretty comparable in the U.S. soccer landscape. And compared to where we started the conversation, on a world level, we're not that far off. You know, American college soccer is not. Not a million miles off fourth or fifth division in Europe. You know, it's pretty close.
That's very, very good to learn coming from someone from Europe like yourself. See, unless you talk to someone like you, then you don't know these things and you continue to build a false perception or a false expectation. But it seems to me that there's been a lot of positive things happening in the U.S. soccer, for especially youth soccer, landscapes to better feed the professional teams and those national teams to bring U.S. soccer hopefully to the next level. Now, let me ask you this. So how did you end up as a college coach? We know you've been a youth coach already, and you've even coached some younger folks, kiddos, but what happened, man? Like, was it the right place, the right time, or it took effort?
Both. I mean, it does take some effort. I was lucky enough. I mean, I was finishing school when I ran out of eligibility. That's a nice way to put it. and you know, I was able to be the assistant coach, you know, and I had enough experience and you know, that I thought I could help the players that were, you know, three or four years younger than me.
Absolutely.
So I got a chance to taste it in college. You know, so I coached the men's team. I traveled with them. I basically became a graduate student assistant, however you want to phrase it. And then I took a year out where I was working. I was working as a performance trainer. You know, and that's when I got in the club game. But to answer your question, I got back in the college game because the women's coach at Truman knew I was kind of available, looking to get into coaching. And for everyone, you got to find a door and you got to put your foot in it, you know. And it's
absolutely.
and it's difficult because it wasn't a well paid job. I actually commuted about 90 minutes. From Columbia, Missouri, where my wife and I were living, to Kirksville, Missouri, because my wife worked in Columbia. So you know, again, that commitment right there. You know, that to me, that shows whether you want to do this or not. I mean, I made the commitment. It's not easy to get into the college game. So I was lucky. I mean, I got my chance, and then from there it was, you know, I was starting my licensing. I'm networking with people, and you know, it's funny because it was the basketball coach at Truman that kind of made the connection for me to go to Westminster. You know,
that's
outside of soccer, but that was the connection that allowed me to go over to Westminster and take the next step, which was to become a head coach. So,
wow. Networking, so important in every industry across the board, particularly soccer. That's incredible. Now, we're almost done with the conversation. I think I would like to ask a couple of really quick things, if that makes sense. But, I mean, this is not the light round yet. But just really briefly, before the light round, could you tell me what is here? I want to talk from a Coach Clay's history, okay, as a coach, coaching college and different sort of institutions, private and small, medium size, and college and junior college and why not. What has been the most prevalent system of play that you've made your teams play and train to?
You know, I'll use a, I think it's a Bielsa quote, you know, it's formations are great until the players start to move. So, you know, I think if you're in the youth game, for me, it was about serving the players, right? So if most colleges are playing in a 4-3-3, you know, or most colleges are playing with a flat back four, then it was best to teach them in that system, right? So I kind of put kind of bigger goals for the youth development phase. You know, when it comes to the college phase and you know, 17 and above, where it's about winning with that team, if I have a favorite, it's probably a 4-2-3-1. But to be honest, it's always based on your players.
Interesting. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I mean, I've played a 4-2-3-1 where one winger is a winger and the other winger is an inside defensive midfielder. You mold that shape to fit your team. That's how I've always felt. And you know, you can't put square pegs in round holes. It doesn't work.
Right.
So you have to find a square hole for the square peg. And sometimes you have to create that, or sometimes it exists because they fit right in the system.
Right, because soccer is fluid. I mean, obviously, once the ball rolls, they all go with it. And we have to make sure we have the right knowledge to make sure that we train the different parts of the game to train how we want to see our players move in the different thirds, in the different channels. And what are we going to transition from a defensive standpoint information into an attacking play? And depends on where we are and what zone of the field. But that is very cool to know that you're a fluid, flexible kind of coach, which I think it's very difficult to find, because a lot of people are just stuck in certain little graphics. Does that make sense?
Well, and listen, I think as human beings, you know, the more comfortable we are when we can control more. So I think when you feel like you're in control, but you know, you mentioned, you know, the player's abilities is to me the key factor. You know, it's the philosophy is great, but you know, I can have Pep's philosophy, but I don't have Pep's players.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah, I mean, so again, you have to, you know, everything's connected in life and in soccer. Everything's connected. You know what your players are. You know how your philosophy develops. It's all connected. So again, I would put players at the first of my, when I ask about formations, show me the players and their strengths and weaknesses, and I'll show you what formation we'll play. So
absolutely, no, that's great. Okay, so let's go to a lightning round. I'm going to throw a couple of words. Please tell me the first thing that pops in your mind, and we'll be done with today's conversation. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, tres, dos, uno, here we go. Lightning round. Scotland.
Beautiful.
Traveling.
Amazing experiences.
Internationals.
Flavor from all over the world. I think it's awesome.
Soccer ball.
I just want to kick it. I just kick it.
How about United States?
Opportunity. I think opportunity is the first thing that comes to mind, and all the great people I've met here.
Family.
Love, passion, you know, everything. Family is the root of everything.
Favorite coach?
Jose Mourinho.
Ooh, yes. Favorite team?
Manchester United. And Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho are tied. Jose is more relevant right now.
Well, that was the lightning round. You got it. Now, before we leave, last words of advice for the audience, any coaches, any players, any fans.
Players, fall in love with the ball. You can always have enjoy it, and you can always do a little bit more. You know, get off the video games and get out and play. Coaches, not to put anything negative out there, but you know, I think a lot of people want to coach, but they want the perks of coaching, and I think you got to reframe your thinking, because it's sacrifice. You know, if you read about Louis Van Gaal, you know, he used to have to drive 2 hours to coach after work at night. And that's how, you know, everyone in coaching's got a story about how much they sacrificed. You know, most of us would coach for free. So the young people coming into it that, you know, I want to make money and I want to, no, listen, it's your passion. And if you're lucky, you'll get opportunities to make it your livelihood too. And when you get that, be blessed and roll with it. But yeah, just that's the biggest things. Be willing to sacrifice, awesome. You know, don't sacrifice too much though, because you still have family and friends and, you know, you still have to find balance in your life. But when you're young, sacrifice, put in the hours. There's nothing that can replace the hours on the field.
Beautiful. Well, I want to say in the name of all of our audience and viewers, thank you so much for your time. And I'll see you on the pitch so we can conquer next spring championship. But again, thank you. And everybody, if you want to get in touch with Coach Martin Claes, can they do so?
Yeah. Get on the East Central website. My contact's there. So that's easy. You know, ECC Soccer Coach is the Twitter handle. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And also Instagram, right?
Yeah, I'm not so good on Instagram, but I'm learning. You got to evolve. You got to stay up with the time. So I'm evolving. But yeah, anybody feel free to reach out. I'm happy to help in any way we can. We're all part of this soccer community. So
awesome. I'm going to leave your contact information in the description of the video as well as in the podcast. Again, thank you so much for your time. And could we have you sometime in the near future?
Absolutely, anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, boss. To everybody, thank you for tuning into the podcast, The Alex Way. And this was Martin Claes, an interview with the East Central College women's and men's teams head soccer coach. If you know of anybody who wants to be at East Central and who is looking for an opportunity, but they know how to play the game really nicely, check out everything in the description for his contact information. Look him up on Twitter and Instagram with that handle, ECC Coach, right? Soccer Coach?
Soccer Coach, yep.
There you go. And look for us, The Alex Way Podcast, hashtag The Alex Way in every social media. Like and share, subscribe, comment below. I'll see you some other time. Ciao.
You've been listening to The Alex Way. We're all over the internet. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn.